Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
Good morning. 4 minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold with you today. Colossians 3, verse 12 says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, that'd be us, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. How is your Monday starting? Can you do all that? Kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. There's challenge number one as we're getting started today. It says, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you have a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And above, over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So let's be mindful of that today. And today starts another week. And, you know, we've all feeling a little bit maybe like we didn't get as much sleep as we wanted. I think the alarm, when it went off today, felt a little bit earlier than usual. I think it takes a couple days, 2-3 days to get adjusted, where you start to go, okay, now this new time is working for me. So be nice to yourself today and be patient and kind to other people, because they're having maybe an equivalent day of where they're down an hour of sleep as well. So let's all be patient with each other today. Today is the day a House committee wants the Justice Department to provide evidence backing up the president's claim that he was wiretapped during the 2016 presidential campaign. The House Intelligence Committee has given the Justice Department until the end of the day to turn over any evidence. The president accused former President Obama of the offense on Twitter, but hasn't provided any proof. There are reports today that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is taking steps to launch a presidential bid. The New York Post reports that he has hired a pair of high-profile Florida fundraisers. Boy, when that happens, you know someone definitely wants to run for office when you're booking the Florida fundraisers. And this is a very exciting time for basketball. The Golden Gophers here in the state of Minnesota, they're headed to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 5 seasons. That's kind of cool. And for the first time ever, how cool is this? A father and son have led their respective schools to the NCAA tournament in the same season. I love firsts. Louisville head coach Rick Pitino and his son, Minnesota head coach Richard Pitino, are both in the big dance this year. The Cardinals are the second seed in the South region, while the Golden Gophers earned a 5 seed in the Midwest. So that's kind of exciting. There's an official in Colorado in the animal control. They said they're not going to be returning a family dog because it's not really a dog. Huh. Pause for making you wonder what it is. Fox 31 says the animal named Capone is actually a wolf-dog hybrid. The dog owners say they rescued Capone a decade ago from the Adams County shelter, which classified him as a German Shepherd mix. Aurora City officials are running DNA tests to prove whether or not the animal is a dog. They've had it for 10 years. I mean, let them have Capone back, even if it's a wolf. You know, they're feeding it, taking care of it. I say Capone goes home. Rebecca's looking at me like, yeah, I think Capone should go home.
It sounds like an internet campaign waiting to happen.
It does. It does.
Free Capone.
Yeah, please free Capone over here. And then Pope Francis is reflecting on what he called the beautiful faces of Jesus during the transfiguration and resurrection. During his homily at a Roman parish yesterday, Francis said they give followers the hope and courage needed to handle the face that comes between the two, the face of the crucifixion. He said Jesus' face while being crucified was an ugly face, disfigured, tortured, despised, and bloodied. The Pope encouraged parishioners to look at the cross often and remember how Jesus was annihilated to save the world. Let's always focus on the cross. That is the reason that we're believers, is the shed blood. Anyway, 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a little break and come back. We're going to talk to Dr. Karen Swallow Pryor. We're going to talk about childlessness. Stay tuned. Be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour. Good morning, Bill Arnold here. This is a sensitive subject, childlessness, especially if you're a woman that wants to have a child or you're a couple that has experienced infertility problems, but God uses childlessness And we have on the studio line Dr. Karen Swallow Pryor. She's an author and professor at Liberty University. Hi, Karen.
Good morning, Bill.
Yeah, so childlessness is something you know about.
Yes, it is. As I talk about in the article I published for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission last week, my husband and I experienced infertility throughout our marriage and did not believe in most of the reproductive technologies that are available, and adoption doors didn't seem to open for us. And so here we are at the end of our childbearing years with no children. And I've come to see that perhaps this has been a calling of God on our lives just because of the things that he has had us do and the life that he has called us to, that I think would have been very, very different if he had blessed us with children.
Mm-hmm. But you had to work through some of this personally, as did your husband, but obviously it's a different process for a woman over a man. So talk about how the two of you dealt with that.
Well, one of the points that I wanted to make in the article was simply, well, first of all, there are many, many couples that are dealing with infertility, more so than we would ever even realize. I think anywhere from 6 to 10% or even more of couples face this. And of course, that includes the church, but I don't see the church really addressing this. And as we were facing the diagnosis of my endometriosis, which was at least the primary cause of infertility, and going to the doctor and going through through the logical step of procedures that most people go through, at some point we just felt that the technologies were too intrusive, too costly, and even unethical. And I'm talking specifically about creating embryos in a dish and freezing them and so forth. We're pro-life, and we think that that all life is sacred, including embryos in a dish that whose lives may be at risk because of the procedures.
Mm-hmm.
But we really didn't see the church talking about this. We just were kind of expected. It was like an unspoken message, just take the next step, take the next step. And I just want to stop and pause and ask us all to consider, as individuals, as families, and as the church, are we helping or harming women and families by encouraging the infertile among us to bear children at any cost? Mm-hmm. Is that really what God is calling us to do? And that's the question that I'm grappling with now at the end of this process.
Well, what about when God just says no?
Exactly. We're not a culture that takes
no. We don't
no kindly do
no.
We. No, we don't.
Yeah. But maybe God doesn't want a particular person or couple to, maybe that's not his will for their lives, because there's another purpose.
Exactly.
And God is going to use the childlessness in a very profound way. But we want what we want when we want it. And I get that.
And, I'm someone who always thought I would have children, always desired to have children. It was the ultimate goal of my life. Well, maybe because of that, I take it so seriously, and I thought, raising children is hard and important and serious work. It's the last thing that I would want to do outside of God's will.
No kidding.
So I was just, it's hard enough within his will, but I just, it was just something that I wanted to be sure was within God's will, and if he wasn't opening the doors and providing it, then it wasn't something I wanted to take into my own hands, because we see that happen in the Bible, the story of Sarah, who took her own fertility in her own hands. Even when God had promised to give her children, she did it her own way. And, of course, the consequences of that we all know and are still dealing with in the world today.
Mm-hmm. Karen, do you go through periods of sadness where you're just a little inconsolable for a while? Or, that's kind of a personal question, but how do you manage your own emotions on this subject?
Well, part of the way that I came to realize that God was calling me to not have children is because of the things that he was calling me to. So he was giving me so many things to do in terms of my teaching and writing and speaking, things that I could never have done if I had had children, because I'm not that. I'm not that great of a person. I can't do 100 things. I'm not superwoman. Mm-hmm. So I really just kept my eyes focused on the things that God was bringing me, the opportunities he was providing, the doors that he was opening. And I've just, you know, by his grace, always had a sense of calling and a sense of direction and a sense that he was leading my life. And so, I'm not an emotional person overall. So I know for a lot of women, this is a hard and an emotional thing. But I've just really tried to keep myself within God's grip and do what he wants me to do. Because again, maybe some of it's just fear of not, I don't want to do things that are outside of his will. Mm-hmm. And so that has kept and sustained me.
Mm-hmm. And then we only have about 45 seconds, and I did this on purpose. This is kind of another personal question, but how have you and your husband worked through this? Do you love each other more? Have you found the difficulties that brought you closer together? How about that?
Well, you know, it was really my husband was the one to step in early on and say, when I was about to take the next step in fertility treatment, because that's what my Christian doctor assumed we would do. And he's the one who stepped in and said, hold on, you know, are we trying to play God? Is this really what we should be doing?
Mm-hmm.
And just his leadership in that area and his seeing through all of the fog just, you know, it made all the difference in my life and in our relationship in terms of his leading us in that direction and comforting. And I've just had a peace ever since then. And so I'm thankful for him doing that.
What a cool guy. I like him already, and I've never even met him.
Like him, too.
I know. We're going to take a little break when we come back. More with Dr. Karen Swallow Pryor, and we're talking about childlessness. Be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour, talking to Karen Swallow Pryor. She's written an article on childlessness, and we're talking about that. And it seems, Karen, that I've heard this, that kids can be the greatest joy possible in this lifetime and the greatest pain possible in this lifetime. And couples that are childless will pray to God. And if God was listening, the solution would be for him to provide the child. But sometimes the answer is, it's no. And how are we doing today as churches? Are we doing a good job of addressing the childlessness couples and people in the churches?
I really don't think so, Bill. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to write this article. I don't have any particular need to share my story or talk about what we've gone through other than to get this discussion going. I think that there are many women in the church who are experiencing greater pain and sorrow at their infertility, even though it is a painful and sorrowful thing anyway, but because there can be implicit or explicit pressure on women to be mothers as though that's the only calling that God would have on their lives, and they are therefore being unfulfilled if they aren't mothers, I think that that deepens and prolongs the natural sorrow and anguish that they might feel over not having children. There are other things that women can do in the church and the world, and although mother is the highest and most important godly calling that there is for a woman, it's not the only one. And so I think we're deepening women's pain in infertility by assuming women are only called to be mothers or that's all the most important thing they can do. And then I also look at the flip side. What would the church and world look like if more of the women that God had said no to regarding children were doing those other things? What if rather than spending tens of thousands of dollars on reproductive technologies that bring much pain and suffering and loss along with the children that they produce, what if instead of spending time and money and resources on those things, families were adopting the children that are already available, or women were getting into ministry or taking jobs in the church or in the world where they can use the gifts and talents that God has given them in other ways. I think the world and the church would look very, very different if childless and infertile women were doing the other things that God may be calling them to, and the church were supporting them in it.
Mm-hmm. Because the church usually speaks to the majority, which is pretty typical, but that majority would be, couples with kids. And, you know, when you're among your friends and they're always talking about their kids, how does that work for you?
Right. And, you know, and so and my I wrote my article not just for childless women and couples, but for singles as well, because there are an increasing number of singles in the church as marriage is delayed and more and more people are growing older, unmarried. These are people who are probably not going to have children as well, and they don't fit the mold of the married couple with children in the church. And so singles, I think, feel a lot of the same pressures and a lot of being left out of the life of the church because they're not following the typical pattern.
Mm-hmm. God has certainly wired us in a very profound and specific way. Now, having said that, and I'm super sensitive to both sides of the story, but when Augustine talked about disordered loves, I would imagine kids and grandkids can pretty quickly become a very disordered love. Would you comment on that?
Well, I think, you know, in some senses, we have made an idol out of the nuclear family, out of our spouses, out of our children. And, you know, the pattern that God sets forth in the Bible of marriage between one man and one woman that produces children is a beautiful and it is the gold standard.
It is
the picture, the very picture
no one's
of
arguing
the church.
That. Yes.
Right. Yeah, we live in a fallen world and these things don't always go that way. And when they don't, it's very easy to turn them into idols.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they do, to turn them into idols. And I think that's part of what's happened is because we have turned the family into an idol in some cases, we don't know what to do with the people who don't fit that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to address, I think.
Karen, have you also turned into the world's greatest aunt?
Well, my family is scattered all over the world, but I am an aunt, and I am close to especially one niece in particular. She's struggled in through her adolescence and young adulthood, and God has blessed us with a number of animals that we have fostered and nurtured, and my parents now live with us too. So I'm helping to care for them in their elder years.
And mm-hmm.
My
husband's going?
Teacher, as am I, my husband's a teacher, as am I.
Okay.
And my students often, the ones that I'm close to, have told me they appreciate the time I've been able to invest in their lives, and they know that that wouldn't have been the case if I'd had children of my own. And so God is using us in many ways in the ministry that he's called us to, and it's really a blessing.
Mm-hmm. So, and nice work and caring for your parents. They moved into your house, and you're taking care of them, so that's awesome.
Well, we built them a house in our yard, but yes, but we are helping to care for them in their old age.
Yeah. So they're on your property, but you haven't seen them in months. Is that right?
I check on them every morning when I go out to feed the horses.
That's so nice. And you used another expression, struggling through adolescence. I've never heard that before. I thought adolescence was easy.
Well, you must be the exception to the rule.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, Karen, I appreciate this conversation. This is not an easy topic, and I know we have to be super sensitive because it's so emotional. And thank you for being so sensitive and loving and caring and offering your perspective, which is beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
Blessings to you.
Bye-bye. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. One after the hour, you know, King Kong was king of the movie box office this weekend. But who doesn't like a big hairy ape that probably has gingivitis? They're always showing you their big fangs. You always see that tartar buildup. It always makes me want to, I don't know, floss something. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. David Aikman. This guy, the Foreign Affairs contributor, he knows so much. I know so little. So stay tuned. You're going to like what you're going to listen to as we talk about foreign affairs. Be back in a minute. Best-selling author and apologist Lee Strobel says, for Christians, the evidence of their faith comes down to one issue.
If I wanted to get at the question of whether Christianity is true or any other religion is true, if you want to boil that down to just one question or one issue, it would be the resurrection of Jesus. Because Jesus claimed to be the Son of God. He once got up before a group in John 10, verse 30, and said, I and the Father are one. And the word in Greek there for one is neuter. It's not masculine. So Jesus was not saying, I and the Father are the same person. He was saying, I and the Father are the same thing. We're one in nature, one in essence. And the audience understood what he was doing because they picked up stones to kill him. They said, you, a mere man, are claiming to be God. So Jesus made these divine claims. But so what? I could make those claims. Anybody could make those claims. But if Jesus claimed to be the Son of God, died, and then rose from the dead, then that's pretty good evidence he was telling the truth. And we see that in Paul's writings of 1 Corinthians 15, verse 17, where he said, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. You're still in your sins. So that is the ballgame.
You can find that full interview with Lee on our website, myfaithradio.com. And as we're getting closer to Easter, you're going to want to make sure you're always ready to defend your faith. It's a great time of harvest when people are thinking spiritually. Christmas, Easter, they pay more attention to it. So let's be equipped to share our hope with others. Take a little break, and when we come back, Dr. David Aikman from Dublin, Ireland.
Throughout the course of my life, I've performed more than 400 weddings. And after a while, you start to notice some similarities. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. At weddings, people are always making speeches. And in 400 ceremonies, I've never heard a mom stand up and say, oh, I love my daughter because she remembers all the things I taught her in life. And I've never seen a bride get up and say, Mom, remember when you used to correct me all the time? But you know what I do hear? Mom, Dad, I'm so grateful for the time we spent together. 10 years down the road, what will your child say about you? And at the end of the day, they'll remember the time you spend more than the words you say.
Are tensions high in your home? Learn how to make every fight with your teen an opportunity for growth with Mark's 7 Characteristics of a Good Argument. Download the guide for free at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here with you, trying to get your day started. And I'm talking to Dr. David Aikman. He's our foreign affairs contributor that we so enjoy talking to. And he is on the studio line from Dublin, Ireland. I think it's poetic that we're talking to him the week of St. Patrick's Day. And I've been in Ireland on St. Patrick's Day. And over there, it's not that big of a deal. It's like kind of going into a donut shop and saying, Happy Donut Day. And we're going, yeah, every day is Happy Donut Day here. But it is something that's quite amusing to the Irish, isn't it, David?
Well, it is, yes. I mean, they accept the fact that Americans who claim to be Irish are 300 or 1,000% Irish and will sort of triumph over any drop of blood they can detect in their own DNA that points to Ireland. So they're quite amused by it.
One of the things I find interesting with my Irish friends is, as they will say, when we go to New York, we cannot believe how friendly New Yorkers are. And then, of course, we look at them and go, what? But then when we go to Ireland, we say, we can't believe how friendly Irish people are. And they look at us and go, what?
Well, that's right. I mean, the Irish have an affectionate relationship with Americans, but they also tend to look at them rather quizzically, as though Americans are basically a bit over the loop about Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Okay, David, I want you to help teach and inform us this morning. I need some teaching, but South Korean president was impeached, and
right.
The president's name is?
Park Chung-hai.
All right, very, very impressive. I tried to rehearse that, and I couldn't get it to come out right. So thank you for pronouncing
right.
it correctly.
Well, and you can be forgiven for not knowing how it's pronounced. Yeah, it's a very unusual thing, this, because this is not only the first time any senior Korean leader has been removed from office in South Korea, but in any democratic operating country in East Asia. I mean, there are very few countries which are completely free and have been for many years, and South Korea is one of them, and now you are watching the whole constitutional process unfolding, and it's very interesting to see where it will lead, because it's obviously aggravated the supporters of the president in a big way, and it could lead to further riots and demonstrations no matter what the authorities do.
And why was the president impeached?
Well, because she basically was charged with corruption for having favored members of her administration by making sure that they had access to contributions from big corporations, you know, even some well-known corporations in the United States of Korean background, Samsung and so forth, were accused of having favored her appointees and her officials. Mm-hmm. And some of them are actually under arrest for the investigation that is ongoing. So how she will end up, I don't know. But I think it's rather healthy that Korea can have an open discussion of this and people can express their views. And so far, we haven't gone to any kind of revolutionary civil war. That's a very good thing.
That is a good thing. Let's go north now. Let's go from South Korea to North Korea. And they're continuing to test missiles, practicing for nuclear war. That's a scary sentence.
Yes, it's very disturbing. I mean, North Korea has been disturbing from the day it was founded back in the 1940s, because it has been not just a fanatically zealous pro-communist society with the usual restrictions on religion, any kind of freedom that take place there, but it has had this sort of cult of the leader, and the first leader was Kim Il-sung, of course, and he presided over the state for a couple of decades, and then his son Kim Jong-il, and now the son's son Kim Jong-un, who seems to be even more zealous, if that's possible, than his father and grandfather were at cementing a sort of cult of personality in place. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, if you wed the cult of personality to sort of belligerent statements about how to deal with the United States or with South Korea, you potentially lock yourself into a rhetorical straitjacket from which you cannot get out without actually leading to war. And that's a real worrisome possibility in the Korean Peninsula.
Mm-hmm. I want to also ask you about the U.S. response to all this. They've sent some B-52s to counter. I don't know what that's all about. We only have a minute, but explain this counter that the U.S.
Well,
has offered.
Sending the B-52s is an indication that the U.S. is serious about responding to any aggressive act by the North Korean military, including bombing sort of targets anywhere in the north. And the fact that the bombers are now on location in South Korea means that they are only a few minutes from the possible target that they might aim at.
Okay.
So that's putting North Korea on notice.
Okay. David, so interesting. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the violence and tension in Europe right now and that German train attack. It's 45 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. David Aikman. We'll be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour, my favorite retired professor, Dr. David Aikman. We're talking to him. He's in Dublin, Ireland, living there. How cool is that? So you know firsthand some of the violence and tension that's going on over in Europe. Talk a little bit about the German train attack. I know that's scary talk on a Monday morning.
But. It is. Well, the German train attack was a guy with a hatchet or something who began to chop at people. Mm. And when he was stopped and arrested, the only thing that the authorities would say is that he was a former resident of former Yugoslavia. Well, what a peculiar way of describing somebody who actually comes from Bosnia.
Mm-hmm.
And as everybody knows, there are a lot of fanatical Muslims living in Bosnia. So why can't they just indicate what his origins were? We don't know. The police say they cannot tell whether it was a terrorist attack or not. But Europe is so much on edge about these random attacks in different places, in Germany, in Holland, and other points, that it doesn't make sense to kind of conceal where he might have come from and what his possible motives were.
Mm-hmm. It's really a scary idea to think you're on a train and there's a guy pulling out a hatchet and coming after people.
That's right.
It's horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that is what the Islamic State and many other Islamic organizations are actually calling for people to do if they think that they're serious Muslims and if they're in either the United States or Europe.
Mm-hmm. David, let's talk a little bit now about the upcoming election in France. Is the French election. Talk about that. It's unprecedented.
Well,
why?
Well, what's happening in France is what's happening in neighboring the Netherlands, where somebody called Geert Wilders is a candidate for the Dutch parliament, and he is very much anti-immigrant, and indeed he's actually calling for a ban on the Quran. And he has a great deal of following because, just like many people in Britain who voted for Brexit, which was the break from the European Union membership back in June last year, many Dutch feel that their country is being taken away from them by migrants from the Middle East who have completely different values from those of Dutch society. And, well, if I can still say a few words about Holland, because it's very important, there's a big dispute between Holland and Turkey,
mm-hmm.
because Holland refused permission to two Turkish ministers to come into their country in order to speak at a rally in favor of changes to the constitution of Turkey that would give much more power to Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that kind of sort of sentiment of suspicion of what Islamic regimes are wanting to see happen in Europe is, of course, affecting the French election, because the French are also very conscious of how their society has been changed.
Mm-hmm.
They've had numerous terrorist attacks from Islamic groups in the last 2 or 3 years. And Marie Le Pen really wants to stop this and move France not just out of the danger zone of Islamic terrorism, but even out of the danger zone of what she considers the European Union to be. So she is advocating for France, the changes in the relationship between France and the European Union that Britain undertook last June in its referendum.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's shift to U.S. politics here a little bit. I want to ask you about did President Obama bug Trump Towers? Obviously, they were going to pull out all the stops at election time. And do you think that happened?
Well, you know, without having access to any of the intelligence information,
I sent it to you, David. I sent it to you.
That's right.
You're
yes,
not
you
going
did.
To do your homework. I'm not going to have you on again.
Without having seen the stuff myself, I couldn't make any intelligent judgment. But I think it's reasonable to assume that the Obama administration, during Hillary Clinton's run for the presidency, was very anxious to do everything it could to find out what Trump was able to do or could do in the campaign against Clinton. Because if Trump won, of course, the Obama people knew that he would then trash the Obama legacy, which is indeed what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's reasonable to assume the Obama administration would have used any electronic access that they had to eavesdrop on the Trump campaign activities. That's all I can say definitively.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not unreasonable to assume that something like that was going on.
I couldn't agree more. Now, today is the day a House committee wants the Justice Department to provide evidence backing up this claim that he was wiretapped. Now, when he makes a claim and has not produced evidence yet, of course, that's going to stir up a lot of controversy. But why would he make that claim if he didn't know something?
Well, I think that's a reasonable question to ask. I think he has, well, during his election campaign, he must have had several points of contact with intelligence agencies of various kinds, and he must have had his own electronic experts who were surveilling his communications with people outside Trump Tower, and they probably warned him. Very likely that somebody put a tap on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is not unheard of in political campaigns. After all, it happened at the beginning of Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a new development.
Right. So if there is a foreign agent of some kind, a spy or something that somehow gets into the Trump organization, then by law, the president can, well, I don't know if he does it, but there can be surveillance then put on that. And they could have said that there was someone in the Trump organization who was
a spy. Well, yes, that's absolutely correct. I mean, there are all kinds of legal reasons that would justify Trump putting his own people under surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes more complicated, though,
yeah,
when he is making allegations which the normal intelligence agencies, for example, the FBI, CIA, or NSA, are not able or willing to support. So we'll have to see where this investigation goes.
Mm-hmm. David, we just have another minute, so I'm going to ask you, how is the offensive going against ISIS, in your opinion?
It seems to be going very well. I mean, they've taken back most of Western Mosul, and they've given a warning to any ISIS fighters remaining in the city that the exit route has been cut off, and any ISIS fighters who are found, if they don't surrender, are going to be killed. So I think that is making it clear that as far as Mosul goes, the battle to rid it of the ISIS presence is actually succeeding in every way that people hoped.
Mm-hmm. I so appreciate you processing all of this foreign affairs news and all the difficult subjects that we cover. And despite all that, you still feel a lot of the joy of the Lord in your heart?
Well, thank you. I do. Yes, I'm grateful to the Lord for everything he's done for me.
Uh-huh. And encourage us as we go out, because we hear this news and it sounds scary. And this is the kind of news I don't want to sometimes hear on a Monday, because I'm trying to get my day started and I'm hearing about ISIS, and that's scary. So how do you encourage us, David?
Well, I encourage you, as I encourage all Christian believers, to know that if you trust in the Lord and you trust that he is going to answer prayer to protect your country's leadership, you have to assume he's doing that whoever the leader is. And of course, as many Christians prayed for Trump because they didn't want the Supreme Court to be directed by choices of Hillary Clinton, then I think there's a reasonable expectation that the Lord is answering our prayers and is going to protect the leadership of the United States.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. I will speak to you again in a few weeks. Have a great St. Patrick's Day in Dublin.
Oh, thank you so much, and the same to you back in the U.S.
Thank you so much. 57 minutes after the hour, we'll take a very short break and be back. May God, our Father himself, and our Master Jesus clear the road for you. I'm feeling that way today in the weather. Got to go back and shovel. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.